WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guests are playwrights Larry Kramer and William M. Hoffman. Kramer wrote the play The Normal Heart. Hoffman wrote the play As Is. They were two of the first and two of the most highly regarded plays to deal with AIDS. As is a tragedy laced with comedy that explores how AIDS and the fear of AIDS affects not only sexual relationships, but also relationships with friends and family. The Normal Heart takes a more political approach. It condemns the medical community and the government for their slow response and criticizes gays for their reluctance to change their sexual behavior. As Is won the 1985 Drama Desk Award as the year's best play. William Hoffman is now at work on a screenplay about the life of Harvey Milk, and he just finished the libretto for an opera commissioned by the Metropolitan Opera. Larry Kramer is the author of the novel Faggots and wrote the screenplay for the movie Women in Love, the adaptation of the D.H. Lawrence novel. Kramer is also co-founder of the Gay Men's Health Crisis, one of the first groups to organize in response to AIDS. I want to welcome you both to Fresh Air.
Hi.
Let me start by asking you about the writing of your plays. You both got started on your plays before the AIDS epidemic grew to the magnitude it has now, before we really comprehended what the magnitude was going to be. William Hoffman, were there incidents in your life that triggered the writing of As Is?
Yes, the very first article in the New York Times triggered it originally, sometime in 1980, 81, I don't even know anymore, before there was a word for AIDS, and before there was a word, even grid, and eventually the death of, I was a long-distance runner and priding myself on, I wasn't going to get AIDS because I was a long-distance runner and I was taking a lot of vitamin C or something like that. And then my best running buddy died of AIDS, and I just realized that I was vulnerable and fell into a deep depression, and I to work out of that depression, I wrote As Is, completed As Is.
But you, Larry
Did it
Kramer?
Work?
Yes.
Yes, you're no longer depressed.
Less depressed.
Less depressed. I think we knew from the very beginning what was happening, so I don't think it's fair to say before anybody knew what was happening. I think this epidemic has been utterly predictable from day one, and exactly what a number of us said was going to happen has happened, and no one listened then and no one is listening now.
What do you think you've said in your play about what was going to happen that has come true?
Well, that it's going to get worse and worse and worse, and that nobody's going to pay any attention to it. And that I think that still holds true, that despite all of the media attention, none of that media attention is manifesting itself into action at the top. By that I mean actual research and science, not all of this red herring talk about mandatory testing and sex education in the schools and condom on TV. All of that is just nonsense. It keeps everybody's mind off of the all-out war that must be waged scientifically and research-wise, and which is not being done, even though the government has appropriated masses of dollars, those dollars are not being spent.
It seems extraordinary after all this time. That's all the president can talk about is testing, no compassion, no...
Just so everyone will think he's doing
testing,
something.
As if testing is going to do anything. It gives people the dangerous illusion that they might be safe through testing, which is crazy. Just delusionary thinking.
William Hoffman, when you wrote your play, a good friend of yours had died of AIDS.
The first, right? I have a number of good friends. Yeah.
But this meant, writing the play meant you had to really immerse yourself in the subject just at a time when you might have really wanted to repress it or try to get away from it for a while. Was it hard to go that deeply into it?
I hated it. I thought I would get AIDS by thinking about it. And it was some kind of magical thinking, which I think is kind of ordinary. I think it's most people's reaction to AIDS is if you look at somebody with AIDS, you can get it, or think about it, you can get it. It's very strange and superstitious, but I think most people, including me, operate on a very superstitious level. Yes, it was painful, and I'm glad I didn't.
Larry Kramer, in your play, you're critical of the medical profession, critical of the government for not working quickly enough and hard enough to get research that would, yeah.
I don't think I'm so critical of the medical profession. I think I'm more critical of the political community for not realizing what was happening. I'm critical of the media for taking such a blastedly long time to write about it with any effectiveness. If you compared with let's take the Tylenol scare, which lasted all of 3 months and in which there were only a total of 7 deaths, 1 month alone, the New York Times had 54 articles about Tylenol. I mean, that's the kind of attention that stop something in its tracks. In the first 1,000 cases of AIDS, the New York Times had written 7 articles, and that's over something like 15, 18 months. Now, that's a pretty awful track record. I'm also, and still am, very angry at the gay community for being so politically weak and not fighting to save its own life.
Well, let me quote something that one of your main characters says in The Normal Heart. He says, "When are we going to admit we might be spreading this? We've sexed ourselves silly for years and years. Sometimes we've done it in the filthiest places." You were really, I think, criticized by a lot of gays for comments like that, for blaming the gay community for the spread of AIDS, and for a lot of people said that you were coming out against sex.
Well, I think it says more about you than it does about me that in my entire play, that's the one line you should have picked out. The play is a concatenation of many arguments from all different sides, presenting that argument as well as the reverse argument. And again, I think it is unfair of you to have chosen that line. A virus lands in a community. It doesn't choose a community. It just lands there. And it spreads. There are those of us who felt that it was very important very early on to talk about stopping having sex, just like people are now saying that that's what has to be done, or that much safer measures have to be taken. And this particular character is advocating that.
Okay. William Hoffman, your play takes a very humorous approach in a way. It's a comedy of sorts. It's a comedy.
I think that my characters have humor, but I don't think it's in any sense a comedy. No, I was drawing portraits from life, mm-hmm. and a lot of the people I know who are dealing well. You can't deal well with dying, but people who were not falling apart spiritually were using. Humor. We're laughing. We're having as a way of gaining perspective. And I also got that from my father, who was dying at that time, not of AIDS. But and I noticed that I who was filled with so much self-pity, had no sense of humor at the time, and I was learning from something from people who are really much worse off than I. And that's why the play is laced with humor. I wanted perspective, and you get perspective through humor.
Did you go through a period ever of thinking, well, jokes don't belong in this, and
no.
I shouldn't be doing comic
absolutely.
Portrayals
never
of characters
did that.
At
never
all?
Never did that. I felt I was doing portraits from life. I felt obligated to draw the way I saw it, and I loved it, and I knew it was the right thing to do. And I never had any doubts about the humor. I had doubts about a lot of things, but not about the humor.
What did you have doubts about?
I didn't know how expositional, how much information about AIDS should go in the play, because I was writing at a time when no one knew anything. You know, there was a lot of information to get across, and I didn't know how much. You know, some audiences members, some of the gay guys would know an enormous amount, and some of the people would know nothing, and I didn't know where to draw a line. We finally just asked our audience to fill out comment cards, and we figured out through their comments how much we had to put in. And it was really hard. I had a lot of doubts.
Were you ever both worried at all that, you know, who's going to spend their money on their Saturday night out to see something about AIDS? Your show started off-Broadway, which is, I think, different from Broadway. I think people take a much more open-minded and broader view of the theater off-Broadway. It's not as, you know, total entertainment oriented, but were you ever concerned that it would be hard to find backers for something about AIDS? Seriously.
Well, my play was turned down by every leading theatrical agent in New York. So.
Beyond worry, then.
Look, when you write plays, it was so totally hopeless that by that point, it was,
I think you
right.
just, if you believe enough in what you're doing, and you have to, you know, part of writing a play is also going out there and flogging it, and If your passion is strong enough to make you write it, your passion should be strong enough to get it on somehow if you can. And I sometimes get upset when writers sort of don't have that extra energy to go out and do something once they finish something, as if somehow miraculously it's going to happen by itself.
Neither of us is particularly aloof. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, speaking of passion, I think one of the things you both want to do in your plays is to really motivate people to take some kind of action, and also I think to have people feel empathy.
I don't think that's what I was trying to do. I let Larry speak for himself, but I wasn't trying to get people to do anything. I'm not against doing that, but that isn't what I was doing. I believe in propaganda, I like propaganda. I think there's a great tradition of propaganda in the theater. That just happens to be not to be what I was doing in this particular case. I was just trying to do portraits. Now, that if it has a social effect, I'm proud of it. I love it. That isn't what I set out to do.
Oh, who remembers back that far? You sit down and you write what comes out, and there's nothing in the play that didn't happen in one shape or another, and it became really just an attempt to record with as much honesty and fidelity to the emotional truth of all of that, what actually had happened. So I lived all those times, and I wanted to report them along the way. You want people to cry because it's the saddest thing that I've ever known and will ever have to know. And you want people to pay attention. And I think you really want to change the world. I think every writer probably secretly wants to do something like that. But I think we've all had enough experience to know that we can't.
I was motivated partly by the murder of my family during the Holocaust. Between 50 and 200 people were murdered in Latvia and Poland in my family. And I knew one of my goals was to not be silent. And that was my action in this case, was that I was furious at the Germans and the nice little Russians, nice little Latvians for not saying anything. And I figured I could not say nothing. And so I wanted to speak up. And in that sense, I was being political. And I was very, very conscious all the time of the murder of my family, all the time. Mm-hmm. Thought of it night and day. I thought more of the murder of my family than sometimes of AIDS.
That makes me so mad. Again, that leads into exactly how I feel about the gay community now, where everybody's being very nice and not getting out there and fighting and yelling and organizing. And there are many comparisons in my play to just what Billy is talking about, to how the Jews behaved in America, particularly in the 30s, where they just looked the other way while all of this was happening to them and theirs. I'm beginning to think that the gay community in this country has a death wish. That they're simply allowing, by their own passivity, we are colluding in our own genocide, because I do truly think that genocide is going on now of gay people and black people and Hispanics and drug-using people and prostitutes, all of people, groups of people that the right wing and the religious right are very happy to have no longer around. And when it starts happening to white bread people, that's when the government will do something, and not until.
Larry Kramer, you've been an activist for years in this area. And I'm wondering, what do you think are the effective ways of fighting against a virus, or of fighting for something that will help find a solution to fight against a virus?
I don't consider myself an activist. And strangely enough, I will probably surprise everyone that I don't consider myself a political person, whereas I'm probably the most political person in the world. I'm just a person who has very strong opinions and who is living in the middle of wartime and perceive a great many wrongs that are going on and want them addressed. That's what democracy is all about, screaming out when you're stuck with a pin and need help. Why have you got carried away here and lost sight of your question?
Oh, about effective ways to organize. I mean, you criticized a lot of people for not speaking up.
Politicians only understand one thing: pressure. It is as simple as that. If you don't apply it, you don't get anything. And the gay community gets nothing because it applies no pressure. Pressure comes from organization. It comes from large mailing lists like the National Rifle Association has and like Jerry Falwell has. It's adding your
name
to a list.
That's not happening.
It's adding your name to a list. It's sending in contributions like all these Bible programs get millions and millions of dollars. Gay organizations have very few thousands of members. They have no money. The gay community is the stingiest community in the world when it comes to giving money to their own organizations, to joining their own organizations, to these organizations working well with each other, coordinating, having lobbying efforts in Washington. Just all the lessons that the Jews learned that you learn through the Holocaust. We have to learn through AIDS.
It's odd that the gay community right now is getting more organized on about AIDS. In many, many communities all over the country, gay people are very organized in terms of AIDS self-help groups, Gay Men's Health Crisis in New York, Shanti Project in San Francisco. But yet, it has not yet translated. This kind of organization has not yet translated itself in terms of pressure groups, political pressure, which is vital.
By the system that they, the very system that they were formed to make accountable. And I'm often said how wonderful Gay Men's Health Crisis is in New York. Well, yes, it is. But if you, when you think that there are 1 million gay people in New York and Gay Men's Health Crisis has 700 volunteers, big deal. And a lot of those are straight. You know, where are the other 950 blah, blah, thousand?
So you think there needs to be more effective lobbying and also
Absolutely.
More effective fundraising?
I mean, for example, this is outrageous, this the idea right now of testing that it should go out and be broadcast and these ideas being bandied about and there aren't huge protests is
unbelievable.
Is unbelievable.
We're walking into our own gas chambers.
Unbelievable.
I want to get back to that in a minute. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back and talk some more. My guests are playwrights William Hoffman and Larry Kramer. Kramer wrote the play The Normal Heart. Hoffman wrote the play As Is, and they're two of the first and two of the most highly regarded plays on the AIDS epidemic. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are playwrights William Hoffman and Larry Kramer. You were both talking before about how you think that there needs to be more organizing, more fundraising.
Absolutely.
And just last week, there was a demonstration in Washington, D.C., in which—
We were both there.
Were you both there? 64.
Ringleaders.
Okay, 64
You're
people.
Looking at the two people who started booing Ronald Reagan first.
Yeah.
64 people got arrested who were blocking traffic.
I'm one of those.
You
I
got arrested?
There.
And
was.
So you were arrested by policemen wearing rubber gloves mm-hmm. to protect themselves against mm-hmm. the AIDS virus. What did you think of them wearing rubber gloves?
I'm going to fool you and say it didn't bother me as much as it bothered everybody else. The Centers for Disease Control, that inept organization that is supposed to monitor diseases in this country, has in fact put out guidelines for healthcare workers and people handling people that they should wear rubber gloves. So the police in Washington were basically just following instructions by doing it. There were a number of AIDS people there. It was a hot day. If one of the policemen had had an open sore or something like that, then it is a not insensible precaution. We were treated exceedingly well in prison. I guess they're used to all those protesters. Again, what made me angry, we got wonderful media attention, and I'm exceedingly grateful for that. But there were only 300 of us. And if in this entire country, the gay community can only rouse 300 people to march in protest against the president's AIDS policies in front of the White House, that shows you what I, more concretely than any of my my rhetoric, what we're up against.
I think what it also shows is the terror in the gay community of asserting itself. Total, stark, raving terror of self-assertion. And I think this has to be addressed. And I think this is at the root of it.
I don't agree with Billy on all of this. I don't know what the reason is, but 24 million people can't all be terrified.
They're gotta I think
be,
they are. They
can't,
That's
they've got to be more than 300 who have the courage not to be terrified.
Well, there's a lot at stake, I think, for people going to a demonstration about AIDS. A, people might assume that you're gay, and if you're not, if you are gay and you're there and you're not out of the closet, you might feel very
but millions of people are out
intimidated
of the closet
by that. And then
now.
The other thing is that people might assume you have AIDS or test positive. You might be nervous about that. There's just a
My
lot of assumptions.
My dear woman,
that
we are into the beginning of the seventh year of the epidemic. These excuses no longer are valid. We all have tens. Hundreds of friends who have died. I no longer will accept the excuse of terror, of closetedness, of homophobia. We have made a virtue out of being victims for so long.
I think you're right, Larry. I have no disagreement with it. I I think the only reason why I bring up the fear is that to overcome it, we have to understand it. And the point is to go on beyond it, to act in the face of the fear, not to give in to the fear.
Well, but again, I say that some people are fearful, mm-hmm. but 24 million people aren't all fearful, mm-hmm. that you can't use the same excuse.
Laziness is not a good explanation either.
I think there are thousands of excuses. Mm-hmm. I think that we are brought up to be good little boys and girls in this country. We are brought up not to make waves. We think the system is going to take care of us. We think that the National Institutes of Health is so blessedly wonderful that they're going to do everything without our telling them to. We think that our elected mm-hmm. representatives are going to do things without our telling them to. All of these things, in addition to fear, in addition to being treated badly, whatever, plus our own inexperience.
Whatever it is, people do have to take more action. Whatever.
No question. Yeah.
You both made the analogy before to the Holocaust, that the AIDS epidemic and seeing people dying.
I have to be very clear. Yeah. I have to be very clear about this. The AIDS epidemic is not the Holocaust. I don't think that in the slightest. What, in my experience, is I have only two experiences where I have lots of people missing in my life. That's AIDS and the Holocaust. That does not mean that I think that people are promulgating AIDS as they promulgated the Holocaust. I do not think that at all.
I think it entirely.
We don't
I do
agree.
Think it is our. I think it is our Holocaust, mm-hmm. and I think that if you look at those 8 years between 1933 and 1941, while everyone was saying, "Oh, nothing is happening; it's going to get better," these are these very precious years, the same precious years we are living through now. That if we took action, it wouldn't become what happened in 1941, which is going to happen to us beginning in 1991.
I think because none of us have ever lived through an epidemic like this.
This is ordinary in human history.
But not in the recent past.
In the recent past, it's ordinary. We had syphilis, epidemic syphilis, until what year? 1941 or whatever, until sulfa drugs. We had the 1919 flu epidemic, which killed 20 million people. Epidemics are ordinary facts of human history. What is extraordinary is that we thought that we had gone beyond it, and we were exceedingly guilty of hubris or chutzpah to think that we had gone beyond epidemics. What is extraordinary is that the government's inaction in the face of this epidemic.
I think you put your finger on exactly why I do then make the comparison with the Holocaust, because I do think that the inaction of Ronald Reagan and the intentional conscious actions of the right wing are indeed conscious motivations and not dissimilar to what Hitler did, i.e. perpetrated genocide. I think that they know this is going on and they want it to happen, and therefore science and research will not be attended to while this man is president of the United States.
I think many people are trying to put the AIDS epidemic into some context of something they've experienced in the past or know something about to help them better understand it. There's an article in the Village Voice this week in which Richard Goldstein calls AIDS this generation's Vietnam War because of the political lines that it's drawing and because of the effect it's having on consciousness and how people are living their lives. And I wonder what you think of that.
I don't think you can compare it with anything, and I don't know why we always have to compare everything with something. It is a very complicated issue. It's exceedingly difficult to make this issue comprehensible to the average layman.
I want to go back to something that Larry said, which I don't agree with. I think to label the right as being responsible for not being very helpful, I don't find the left any more helpful. I don't mm-hmm. find any group.
Indeed, I do agree with that.
I really feel this cuts across every kind of issue.
When you have a man like Ted Kennedy, who is in charge of the Senate's Health Committee, has yet to speak out publicly in 7 years to take a courageous stand. When we have our own two senators, D'Amato and Moynihan. Moynihan, you're big liberal. I agree with you completely on that.
As the disease spreads, do you find people becoming more understanding about it?
There's a polarization. There's more polarization than I thought. On one hand, I think there are more people who are understanding. On the other hand, I'm surprised at the hatred of gay people and people with AIDS in this country, both. I feel both things very strongly in my travel.
Hatred by the gay people.
By gay and straight people of gays and people with AIDS. There's a lot of
that's
hatred.
Interesting. Yeah.
There's a strong polarization. People, there aren't too many people who are in between. There are people who have strong feelings on it. And, I think by and large, the country has been very understanding, surprisingly understanding. And that's a measure of the strength of goodwill and democracy in this country. On the other hand, there are strong forces of hatred that have to be combated. I think the people understand this epidemic much better than our leadership. Our leadership has been terrible and should follow the lead of the people of the country.
I don't know if you'll think this is a fair question or not, but because, I think gays and straights alike are changing their sexual behavior. Since so much of being gay is a function of your sexual persuasion, right, do you think that gay identity, what it means to be gay now, is being altered in a way by the AIDS epidemic and how people are defining themselves as gay? Is that being changed?
I think these
at all?
Distinctions have always been puerile. I think they've always been...
Which distinctions? Between gay and
straight, straight and gay have been totally puerile. I have to say that to begin with. And I'm glad to see that people are modifying their behavior so they don't get AIDS. But I think the image of gay as of this horny bunch of people is really absurd. Gay has been just as much small town. Most gay lives are very boring. Sex lives are very boring and have always been and always will be. And what has changed is the inner city ghetto kind of image that was foisted to us by gay and straight media hype. Like the swinging gay image is changing. I think it's good.
I think it's also forcing us to try and identify, which pleases me enormously, to try and identify ourselves as something much greater than what we do with our genitals, and that we do have an amazing culture with many, many famous people out there, and that we now have to study that culture as women have learned to study their culture and as blacks have learned to study their culture and to identify who was in that culture and to get pride from that, you know, not only actors like Montgomery Clifton and Rock Hudson, but great writers like Proust and Henry James and great economists and great statesmen and presidents of the United States
I feel that it's important to identify these things, but I can't wait to get, it's not in my lifetime, but I think it's ultimately stupid, these distinctions. I feel that it's a necessary stage in our history to distinguish between gay and straight, and we have to go through it, and I'm willing to do it, but I really hate it, basically. I really am sick of it. I think it's stupid to
distinguish people. I disagree with you there. I'm enormously proud of being gay and want that culture to be
strong
and
on that note, we're out of time. I want to thank you both very much for being with us. Thanks for being here. My guests have been William Hoffman and Larry Kramer. Kramer wrote the play The Normal Heart.
We're really good friends.
Yes.
And Hoffman wrote the play As Is, and they were two of the first and two of the most highly regarded plays about AIDS. This is Fresh Air.